I didn't paste our other business. Oh my god. Okay, just talk, Chris. I gotta get this stuff together here. Sorry, one sec.
Hello and welcome to What's the Deal? The only podcast.
The only podcast.
That's the only one.
Why don't you just give up? Put this cast on your pod. Hello and welcome to What's the Deal? The handsomest Seinfeld review show on iTunes. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as always, are Christopher Young.
Hi.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 23, and today we will be looking at season 3, episode 6, The Parking Garage. Good place. Good place to be if you want to walk around in aimless circles, apparently. Chris, that was quite a guttural groan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm pretty good.
You want to expand on that, or is that enough?
What did I do this week? I'll tell you one thing. I've been experimenting at Tim Hortons recently.
What kind of experiment?
Well, you know, they've been putting out a lot of new product. They've been putting out lots of new different donuts and muffins and cookies. I've been trying some of them. I'll tell you a little bit about this.
Tell me about it.
Well, I tried the vanilla dip the other day, which it's got like the vanilla sort of coating, you know, the icing, but then it's got like some chocolate swirl in it. Looks delicious.
Okay.
Not very good.
No.
Didn't do much for me.
So is it like kind of like a maple dip? So it's like the donut with the hole in it.
Ye oldies. That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. None of that cream filling stuff. I don't do any of the filling stuff. I don't go in for that sort
no.
of thing.
How do you feel about the Boston cream? Because Patrick loves the Boston cream, don't you?
Big fan. I like custard though. You know?
No.
Yeah, and I have to say it's disgusting. So
I don't know if I'm gonna go so far as to say it's disgusting. It's just not for me.
Man in the middle.
There you go.
Okay.
But no jam in the middle.
No, you don't like a jam donut?
No. No.
What about a jelly donut?
Don't like it stuff in the middle. I will tell you this, however. I tried the chocolate Danish today.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Yeah, any kind of Danish.
I love a Danish.
The chocolate one, it's new. It's new product from Tim Hortons.
What kind of money are you getting from Tim Hortons?
Yeah. These days, our first sponsor this week is Tim Hortons. Now, some of those other coffee and donut places, you know what they are, right? You know, I'm not going to name them, but you know those other guys that sometimes you go there and you don't get the full value.
Are you talking about Dinky Donuts?
Well,
how are you doing, Cameron?
Me? I do great.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Why not?
Yeah.
What donuts did you try this week?
I had a chocolate glaze.
It's always good.
Yeah, it's a classic. I remember when the chocolate glaze and the double chocolate were new donuts at Tim Hortons. Do you remember that?
Yep. And I can remember when they still had the, you know, baked the donuts in the back
mm-hmm.
system. That was so much better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the apple fritter was never the same. I can't
no,
even do
it used to be huge. Anymore. It used to be so big, that apple fritter, and now, not. Tiny.
It's a shell of itself.
Now, you know, there have been some ups and downs, because on the other hand, there's a consistency of quality. Some Tim Hortons just had terrible donuts, because the bakers were bad.
This
so
is
I
true.
So I appreciate the consistent quality, but
I just
no
never,
personality.
I just never went to those donuts. I just never went to those Tim Hortons.
Do you remember when up front they used to have the fancies case?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so you could get, like, I think they were called bow ties, and that was the a long john cut in half
with
the whipping cream and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're blowing it.
You don't have any of that anymore.
Mm-mm.
No.
But aside from that, you know, it's okay. Have a nice SodaStream water again today, as always.
Mm-hmm.
The good people at SodaStream did not send me a penguin model SodaStream, so...
Yeah,
they sent it to me.
Why you?
I
what
lied.
Do you have to offer?
I lied. You said I was you.
Oh, well, that would work, I guess. I guess you could get away with that.
They heard you on the last show. They're like, we got to get Cameron a penguin. And I'm like, I'm Cameron right here. Here's my address in Ontario.
That's a very convincing impression. Wait, are there two Camerons on this show?
Yeah. That was me.
Oh.
That was me talking right then and there.
Oh, I'm seeing double here. Four Krusties.
But, you know, aside from all that, you know, not too much news to report. It's exam week for high school students.
Really?
No, I'm lying.
You just got back from break, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a break in their, like, it was just Christmas break.
Oh, so it's like midterms?
No, they're on a semester system. So they're in school for, you know, 10 months out of the year. And so after about 5 months, they take an exam, and then those classes are done, and then they start the next classes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's like a high school.
Yeah, it's exactly like a high school. Patrick, enough about me. How are you?
I'm good. You know, same as always. Had a nice breakfast this morning.
Do you have any Tim Hortons donuts?
No, no Tim Hortons donuts.
Could you tell us about your breakfast this morning?
Had an omelet.
Okay.
Had some sausage, some cheese, something else, onions.
And what is the name of this restaurant you went to?
The Village.
Oh, The Village. Yeah. I wish I could have gone.
You were also there, Cameron.
Oh, I was there. Okay. Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was good.
I like it.
I wish I could have gone.
Yeah, too bad you live in the wrong province.
Yeah.
Or as some might call it, the bad province.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
So guess what I'm doing right now, Chris?
Minecraft?
No, I'm not. I'm looking to see if we're on New and Noteworthy, and you know what? I don't think we are. Oh my god.
We're not very new anymore.
But we're noteworthy.
It's true. But it's new and noteworthy, not new or noteworthy. I think we'd have to be both.
Well, Jeff Garland has his new podcast. He's sucking up all the new and noteworthy.
Taking all spots. The wind out of that.
Yeah.
What can I say? We're old guard right now. You know, we're establishment podcast.
Hey, you know, on a very serious note right now, we crossed a nice threshold the other day. We're our subscribers are up, our listenership is up. So, you know, I know at the end of every week we say thank you, but at the beginning of this week, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The dozens of you listening to this show are making the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more than just, like, you know, low dozens. We're in the
medium
high dozens.
We've got it all going on right now. Okay, so don't worry about it.
This is why we're the establishment podcast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about Seinfeld?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you would like to talk about Seinfeld with your friends, or maybe show them some funny pictures that Chris Young made, you should head over to whatsthedealshow.com right now. Doesn't matter what you're doing, stop. Are you listening to this on your way to work? You driving your car? Doesn't matter, stop, pull it up. Are you on the toilet? No excuse then, free time. It's better than Uncle John's bathroom reader.
Definitely.
Head over there. We got all the show notes for today. We got the back episodes, we got it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's your number one stop for this show. So this week's episode, the parking garage, and in this week's episode, the gang of four, as we call them, are stuck.
We don't call them that.
Oh, that's for my other podcast. So the gang are stuck in an underground parking lot, unable to find Kramer's car, and they need to get going because Elaine bought some fish, and who knows how long they'll live in that little plastic bag. And George is meeting his parents outside his apartment at 6:30. Or quarter after six, sometime around then. Because it's their anniversary, 47th. And he's going to take him out. And if he's not there, he's got a lifetime of agony waiting for him.
Installment plan.
Yeah. And Jerry, well, he just has to go to the bathroom. But, hey, he's in the parking lot, too. And, yeah, so that's it. Patrick, why don't you start us off?
All right, so we've got a monologue. And, it's about maps in malls, and Jerry comes up with the bizarre idea how people just need to have suction cups for the map to be less confusing, so you can stand on top of the map.
I don't really get where he's going with that little joke there.
Neither do I.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I've always had a little bit of trouble with using those maps. Those little maps in the mall, I frequently am trying to orient myself, but it's only because I just don't even really understand where I am in the mall. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I have a hard time finding that "you are here" sticker.
Yeah.
But standing on the board with the suction cups, I mean, it was funny for its absurdity. It was better than last week, if that means anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not sure it does.
Means something.
Yeah, last week was pretty bad.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty funny idea, I guess, but it's also just very strange, you know?
Chris, you got anything to say about this?
Not really. It's not that hard to find a way around a mall.
Well, sorry, I didn't realize the human GPS was on this show.
Cameron, you're right. Sometimes it is tricky to find the "you are here" sticker. I agree with that.
Yeah. But sometimes once you get they that, don't even have a "you are here" sticker.
Yeah.
What sort of monstrous mall doesn't have the "you are here" sticker?
I don't know. I need that sticker.
It's a staple.
Yeah, you need that sticker. But I mean, once you got that, you're okay.
Like when you pull up maps on your iPhone, you need that little pulsating pin. I'm not going to go over the entire globe and find myself.
Mm-mm. Who would?
You find yourself in the mall, then you find the Orange Julius, then you get in and get out. It's done.
You love Orange Julius, eh?
Oh, I do.
Patrick, do you have any sort of feelings about Orange Julius? I, like, am surprised it's there.
What?
When I was a child, I was really into it. But I don't know. Beyond that, it's fine, I guess. It's orange juice with milk in it, pretty much. Like, that's what it is, in vanilla.
Something like that.
Orange juice with vanilla ice cream.
You know, I'm looking at some of these other podcasts that are on New and Noteworthy this week.
A lot of Star Trek ones.
There's a lot of Star Trek ones, but there's one there just called Angie's Laughter. All things Avatar? There's only one movie.
Yeah, you gotta stop scrolling through those. Those are very, very distracting.
Well,
it's just going to hurt your self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. My self-esteem's already hurt. How could we not be featured?
How can you not like Orange Julius?
It's not that I don't like it.
You don't get the orange. You don't get the orange. You get the strawberry banana. That's the winner's Julius.
Strawberry banana?
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, you can't have either of those things, can you?
No, I can have all of those things. But thank you for being such a good friend.
You got a fruit allergy. What am I supposed to remember? I know you got a fruit allergy. I'm supposed to remember all the different fruits that you can and can't have.
I bet Patrick apples. Could have told apples you I could eat those. Apples. Just remember apples.
Mm-hmm.
That's like it. That's the only one.
So we're in the parking garage, and the whole gang's there. Elaine's got these fish. Kramer's got this air conditioner. Jerry's just got to pee. And George has got to get home to his parents.
Now, they're there because they say that they were hunting for the cheapest air conditioner they could find.
Mm-hmm.
I hate this. I hate driving around from, like, store to store to store, or if you're, like, downtown, popping into a million stores to try and locate one item. When I see it, as long as the price doesn't seem outrageous, I just buy it and I'm done.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, actually, there was a really funny joke about this, like, where George said that when his dad is searching for a car, it's like he's in the primaries running for president, going from state to state, and they'll like call from a hotel in New Hampshire. That was good.
Yeah, that was one of the few laughs this episode. And it made me think, though, I'm like, maybe George's dad just has another family.
Like, a Korean family.
That's right. Honey, I'm still on the road looking for a car. You know your husband has another family when.
So why don't you tell us, you've mentioned a number of times on the show that you do not like this episode and bottle episodes in particular. Why don't you tell us about this?
Are we doing this now?
Why not?
I feel like this is for the end. This is the summary, isn't it?
Oh, well, I just
want to hear his feelings about bottle episodes in general, and then we can get him out and stop hearing Chris.
No, I'm going to complain the whole time.
I was gonna say, he's moaning the whole way through.
Okay, we can wait till the end.
I'm just gonna say, I like this episode even less than the Chinese episode, the Chinese restaurant episode. Okay. I hate this episode. Let's keep going.
Now, on a technical point here, I pointed out to Patrick. Did you notice the mirrors all over the place in this episode, Chris?
No, I didn't.
It's a small little parking garage set, and they just keep kind of filming them walking around different corners, and there's mirrors all over the place to try and make it look like much bigger than it is. And in some scenes, you'll see people who look like they're walking towards, I guess, where the camera would be, and then you see the exact same couple walking away from it, and you're just seeing the reflection of the mirrors. So they actually did a pretty good job, I thought, of building this set for this episode, because I think if you're not looking for it, you would never notice.
Yeah, I've seen this episode a lot of times, and I've never noticed that before. You know, though, there is one shot where when they say this place is huge, and they show, like, it's like a distance shot. I don't know what you call that, where, like, they show, like, a long distance. But it's all warped because of the mirrors. It's really, like, surreal.
When I was younger
and I watched this, I always felt like kind of dizzy, and could never put my finger on what was going on or why it looked so strange, because it's a really short shot. It's like maybe a second for each shot.
Yeah.
And so you don't get too long to look at it, but it's really weird. There's a lot of distortion.
It's weird that they chose to shoot that, like to shoot a shot of the mirror instead of just towards the long end of the set and angle it to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's what they picked, so I guess they thought that was the best they could do for that.
Yeah, it's weird, though. And, you know, it kind of works, maybe, because the whole thing about this is that the place seems impossibly huge and they can't find their car. And so it's kind of surreal anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely strange. It's like they're in some kind of, like, dream world.
Nightmare world.
Beautiful nightmare world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in these early walking around here, they're not too demotivated yet. They think they're going to find the car. And, Chris, I thought of you right away when Jerry points out the beautiful woman to George.
Thank you. Although that was a prostitute.
What?
She seemed like a prostitute to me. I don't know why she was in the garage. I know we find out later that she's not, but that girl...
Why is she a prostitute?
Just looks like one.
What?
What? Why?
I don't know. The boots, attitude, mall, jersey. That's all works. It all just fits.
Chris, this is totally insane. She's just the
mall?
She's just a young-looking woman. She's got... Is it the red lipstick?
I don't know. Kramer thought she was a man, and maybe that's part of it.
This is very strange. I don't know what to say about this.
I'm surprised that was where you went with this.
Well...
Why a prostitute? I'm still not clear. Because she was in the mall in Jersey?
No, it just came to me. I looked at that girl, and I'm like, wow, if I saw that girl, like, standing on the street at night, I'd be like, yeah, that's a prostitute.
Well, that's a totally different context.
Well, they have to do something in the day.
Everyone does.
Yeah. And they don't have a lot of costume changes.
But almost any woman, if they're just standing on this, like, some dingy street, just waiting there, looking at cars,
yeah,
you might think that they're a prostitute, but... This woman walking through the mall. I don't understand that
at all.
Yeah,
it's just like, if you put any person in, like, the dingy part of town where there's, like, drug dealing, prostitution, things which are illegal.
Under a bridge.
Yeah, and you put that person there at nighttime, I think they're going to seem like maybe that's something they do. But when you take them out of that context, I don't get it. If I took Patrick and put him under a bridge right now, mm-hmm. and it was the middle of the night... And yeah. there was, like, a burning barrel and some, like, you know, homeless people there. I might think Patrick's homeless. Maybe I might think he's, you know, doing something unscrupulous. Now, I'm judging him. Maybe that's not fair. But the mere fact that I had to put him in that weird scenario to justify that is what doesn't make any sense. You had to take that person out of this scene into a place where someone would do prostitution. It's like, take her out of there and put her in a burlesque house, and I'm pretty sure she's a prostitute.
Yeah, this is really weird, Chris.
What can I say? It's where my mind went.
All right. Well,
I don't think that's my fault.
Okay. So anyway, I think it's really funny that George is upset just that this beautiful woman is brought to his attention because he feels obligated to do something about it. Right? Like Jerry points her out and George is just mad that she's a beautiful woman, and it's funny.
Yeah. He doesn't even want to see it.
As Chris mentioned, I don't understand another thing that comes up. Chris apparently did, but the fact that Kramer says that it was a guy. Did you catch this, Patrick?
Yeah, I did. I feel like Kramer... No, I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Chris, do you have some sort of something about this, about how you know that it's actually a man?
Sure, I have in my notes right here. Here's exactly what I have in my notes. She's a prostitute. Next line is, I love how George doesn't even want to tree it. That's supposed to be see it. And then next line is, I think Kramer's right.
Wait, what? So she's a man and she's also a prostitute?
You're
a Scientologist?
You're accusing this person of being a transgendered prostitute?
Scientologist.
Who's also a Scientologist.
That's right.
This is the accusation.
Named Michelle, I think.
Yeah, Michelle.
I feel like, we hadn't insulted any of our listeners for a while, but we covered a lot of bases here.
So I really like George talking about how parents never forget things. You know, like Jerry talks about how when he was 14, he left his jacket on a bus. And he was just on a flight to Chicago, and his parents reminded him to remember his jacket. Do you guys have any things like this? Like, where you made a mistake when you were a child, and your parents just think that's a thing about you?
Kind of. I mean, mine's definitely a family, and you guys know this about me, but as soon as somebody screws up, the story never dies. Mm-hmm. That's the way my family works, and that's the way I treat you guys, the family I've chosen for myself. It's and true. So there are lots of these things in my family, but one of the ones I really like is this story that my sister liked to tell about how when I was a kid, I had just been potty trained, and we were at Sears or some sort of, big department store like that, and we were in the housewares section. And they had all of those, display toilets up in the middle of this store. And my mom was there with my grandparents. And apparently I was just kind of, walking about. Pulled down my pants. Sat up on this toilet with no plumbing attached to it. Did my business in this toilet. And
it was like a show toilet?
That's right. It was like the model toilet in the middle of the store. And my grandparents saw this and immediately told my mom, go get him. And then they ran away because they were embarrassed. And my mom had to go and get me off of this toilet that I had just made a deposit into and wasn't going anywhere anytime soon.
What kind of deposit are we talking about?
I'm not sure. Doesn't matter because you know what the best part about this story is, Chris?
All of it?
So, yeah. So have you ever heard my sister tell this story?
No.
Okay. She's been telling this story for years. The best part about this story is that it's not me in this story. Why would my grandparents run away and tell my mom to do it? My mom's my mother. She would have to do it anyways. The story is about my mom's sister. This story predates me by about 30 years. And my mom or my sister has been going around when she's out here telling my friends this story that I did this. It was my aunt. My mom was 16 in this story. That's why she had to go and get the kid and my grandparents running away is funny. Because they were the parents. They were responsible and they sent their teenage daughter to go and deal with it. But I've been taking the credit for this story for years.
I'm sorry.
I only found out because someone told me oh yeah, my sister told me this story about you. And then they told me this thing and I was flabbergasted. I was just it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
It's a pretty funny story though.
It is a good story.
Mm-hmm. Too bad it didn't happen to you.
You don't have to be embarrassed, Cameron.
It's all right. I mean, I pooped in Shell Buzzy's store, if you guys know who that is.
Local Vancouver celebrity Shell Buzzy, who's like a... He's like a... I can't even remember any... Like a home improvement guy.
Home improvement guy, yeah. And he had like a hardware store. And I, when I was a kid, I guess I just pooped in my pants, in my little shorts. Poop fell right out the leg onto the floor of the store.
Did your parents tell your sister to go grab you? And then
no, I don't think she was born yet, so my mom had to go and get some paper towel and take care of business. Patrick has a similar story. Happened just yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I was in Shell Buzzy's store.
You guys got any of these things? You got, like, a family gem?
Sort of. I, like, when I was a kid, my... my family made a lot of apple crisp, or my mom made a lot of apple crisp, and, you know, like a lot of kids, we had chores, and one of our chores was doing the dishes, and I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, and washing the dish that she always made apple crisp in, and I dropped it while I was washing it, and broke it, and my family has never let this go. Like, every time we eat an apple crisp, we're like, remember how good the apple crisps were before Patrick broke that dish? And then if I'm carrying a big dish, my family would be like, oh, do you need help with that? I wouldn't want you to drop it.
You know what's great about this?
Yeah.
It only took us 23 episodes before we started repeating our
stories. Oh, I've already told that story.
I was going to say, I think I heard this story.
Got to cut that one out.
No, let's leave it in. Your family loves it. Now, here's the little bit of follow-up. See, this is good. A little FU here. After we talked about the story previously, I did ask some family members about this. And they said, yes, it's true. It never has been quite the same. So it's true. You ruined apple crisp or crumble. Which one is it?
Crisp.
You've ruined apple crisp for your family.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between apple crisp and apple crumble?
I think crumble is usually like apple and crumble on like a white cake. Kind of like a cobbler. I'm not sure, though.
Oh, okay.
Because honestly, that was a food I always enjoyed. That was one of my favorite snacks. And I used to go to like the buffet, the local buffet in town in Abbotsford.
Yeah.
Uncle Willie's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I remember Uncle Willie's. By the movie theater, right?
Yeah. And I used to always load up on that apple crisp. Delicious. They had this great big dish that they made it in.
I haven't been to a buffet in a long time. I feel like I should go to a buffet.
No, you shouldn't.
Why? Yeah.
I just think they're usually kind of gross.
I think you're right. They're great when you're a kid, but let's face facts. It's bad food.
What about a pizza buffet? I remember pizza. No, that's the worst.
Pizza is not an expensive food, but if you go to a buffet, that pizza is just sitting under a heat lamp, and people are sneezing all over it.
Don't ruin this for me.
Just go to a normal pizza place and order a slice.
Oh, so not fun.
So another sort of like subplot in this episode is Elaine going around and pleading with people to give her a ride around the parking garage so she can find her car. And, you know, like up until the end of the episode, no one takes her up on it and just give her poor excuses or ignore her for why they don't want to do it.
But would you do this? If someone came up to you and asked you this, would you do it? Because I don't think I would ever be willing to do that unless someone... I don't know. They would have to be visibly in distress before I'd be willing to do that.
Yeah. It would have to not be Elaine being a crazy person. That's for one thing.
Yeah, she gets more and more frantic and upset with people and then starts like openly insulting them, you know, as she gets more upset by it, which I feel like is not helping her chances of getting people to help her. Like there's this one scene later in the episode where there's two, like, bodybuilder dudes, and she's talking to them, and, like, they say they don't want to do it. And then she's like, oh, yeah, why don't you go home to your dumbbells? We're all real impressed.
They're real dudes.
Yeah.
What's the, they like, sure those, are. Their shirts? That's a narrow little piece of fabric on the back there.
Yeah.
Do you think, because earlier, Elaine approaches, like, it looks, like, it seems like the people that Elaine is approaching... to help out are all people coming out of like a casting session for a Doublemint gum commercial.
Well, there
like,
are
there's
those.
those two dudes, and then there's the women that she approaches that are like
The two teens.
the two teen girls that are laughing uncontrollably at everything and look exactly the same.
I think those two girls look like they entered that parking garage in the 80s and they've been stuck there the entire time.
I
Like they haven't been
know.
able to find their way out.
They're just trying to find the Madonna concert.
Yeah, is that. I feel like the way they're dressed is not very. Like, is that how teenagers dressed in 1992?
I don't think so.
Is that how
Maybe.
dudes that go to the mall dress?
I think everyone was just a bizarre caricature.
Yeah, I feel like the like costume department, they were just like, you know, let's throw on something really outrageous on these guys. Like those two muscle guys, wouldn't
So
they be
dumb.
cold? You gotta
Well,
wear a shirt.
did you guys notice that Larry Charles was one of the people Elaine was asking a ride for?
No.
I
Who was
know.
he?
From? Yeah, with this huge beard, the guy who just outright ignored her.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Charles has a few roles in Seinfeld. He also later plays, I guess, I don't know what his character's name, but when Elaine's on the plane and she goes to the bathroom on the plane and a guy comes out and it's really stinky in there, Larry Charles is the guy who stunk it up.
Oh. You know, so Larry Charles, like one of the writers of the show, is on screen a few times. And Larry David just does the voiceover. Is there a reason he's never actually on screen?
No, he's on screen.
Oh, is he? Oh,
He
well, he is that one guy, the
he's
like
Frank's
superhero or
lawyer.
something.
Yeah, he's
Frank's
Frank
lawyer,
Costanza's
yeah.
lawyer. He also has a really minor role in the episode, the Serenity Now episode, I think it is,
Oh,
maybe.
really?
Or is it that one? I think, no. It's the episode, The Gum. That's the episode, The Gum. And that's where George thinks that he's been shortchanged by Ruthie Cohen, and he ends up wearing the, like, King Henry VIII costume. Larry David plays the cashier at the end of the episode, and he has a line about, "Sorry, Your Majesty, we don't accept bills with lipstick on the president." He's in there. That's a very specific story, though. So to kind of roll it back here, we kind of jumped ahead a bit. So Kramer is encouraging Jerry after we see that completely normal woman walking around in the underground parking lot. He encourages Jerry to pee in the parking lot. I could never do that. That's disgusting. Could you pee in like a concrete building, just like against a
Well, what
wall?
if it was like, what if you like felt like if you waited another 2 minutes, you would just pee your pants?
Okay,
If
no,
I
but
was.
no. That's none of this episode makes sense. A, Jerry should just go find an elevator, go back up to the mall, go use a washroom, meet somebody back where they at a designated area. This is not a problem.
Okay, and B.
B, they would find their car faster. I hate this episode.
I mean, I agree. I keep asking myself why Jerry doesn't just go, like go back up the escalator to, use a washroom.
Yeah.
But so imagine though if you're in some kind of like, imagine if you're in some kind of nightmarish like 10-floor parkade and you're in the bottom. And you know you're not going to be able to, like, there's no public washroom anywhere. You're going to have to go find one in some building or a coffee shop. And you know it's going to take like 15 minutes. You got 2 minutes before you pee your pants.
Okay,
Would you do
I
it?
tell you what, if that was the case, but Jerry's not there.
I think he is. I
I
think
don't
that, well,
he's way too
I
calm.
think they present the situation poorly, but I think that's what they want. Like, he doesn't really have a choice. Because he doesn't want to pee on the, he doesn't want to pee there either. And it's just the goading and his urgency that he does it.
I suppose, yeah. Well, he refrains for the time being. He refrains.
Oh, wait. I just want to say, if, for me, if I really had to pee, if I didn't think there was a chance of getting caught, like if there was no one around, I'd just do it. No problem.
I
It's
wouldn't do it
gross.
inside like this because, it smells up everything.
Oh, that's true. Inside, maybe I would feel guilty.
Because I think about it, like, you've been in the parking garages, like in downtown here.
Yeah.
Those, like, alley, like the stairwells where someone's peed in there, it
It's
just reeks of
awful.
urine.
I guess, I mean, I'm more thinking of like when I'm outside or something,
Yeah, but I
and.
pee against a tree.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
But this is, like, inside a completely self-contained concrete
yeah.
structure.
I think unless it was like super urgent, I wouldn't do it then.
So but Michael Richards,
but like things don't get to super urgent status unless you're like out in the middle of nowhere, and you know, it's like you're in a concrete giant like structure with a million bathrooms in it. It's just an elevator or an escalator ride up, and there's a bathroom.
Mm. Yeah.
So Michael Richards in this episode has a giant air conditioner. He's the only one that got it, or Kramer, I should say. And it was originally it was just an empty box, but apparently he had it weighted down with something just to try and make it more realistic the way he handles the box. And I think it looks good the way he does the box. He's always kind of like clutching and rearranging and pulling it up and falling yeah. over with it. And I guess it's just kind of a further indication of how committed he was to like acting. It's mm-hmm. really strange when you watch the inside looks for these episodes. You can still see how like tight he was about everything and how everything had to be, and that he was really insistent on never breaking character. There's a story at the end of the episode that we'll touch on with that, but pretty crazy to think that he would go around for like an entire like however long the shoot was with like a 40-pound box lugging it around constantly.
Yeah, you know, before we started doing the show, I had no idea how serious Michael Richards was about his acting in the show. But he takes it very seriously.
Yeah, like, way beyond any of the like, other people.
Yeah, it's commendable.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So speaking of peeing, Jerry eventually is goaded by Kramer and pees in a little corner. And he's caught by the mall cop.
He is caught.
Mm-hmm. And I like
the mall cop a little badge.
Yeah, I like how instantly guilty Jerry looks when he's turned around. He does a good job with the guilty face.
I think if you're zipping up and you turn around, there's someone there. Guilty face is definitely going to be on you.
Yeah.
What
I don't understand about this whole situation with Jerry in the office with the security guard is like, why is he in there for so long? Is it because he won't admit to it and the cop can't just give him a ticket?
That's what I don't understand either.
Because he's in there for so long and like giving this long-winded story about what's going on. It's strange.
Speaking from authority here, I can tell you right now, you just get a ticket.
It's Do you not... ever pay that ticket, Chris?
Hell no. Of course not.
You got a
but
ticket.
I mean, mine was
you got a public urination ticket.
Wait, you
and
have,
you know what?
How can you not have told this story already?
Well, okay, so there was this bar that we always used to go. We would go there like several times a week, and I hated the bathroom there because, as has been mentioned on this show, I'm a stall man. You know, I'm a Richard stall man, if you will. but the stalls were terrible at Winos. This is the bar, it's called Winos. And
really amazing name, huh?
But I would always just go to the back alley and just use the alley, you know. And I did this for like years, like every night. And on the night it was closing, on the very last night, I go out. And as I'm zipping up, I hear the flash, or rather, I see the flash of the blue and red, and guy steps out, and I'm like, fortunately, I wasn't very, you know, intoxicated, and I was very polite, and the guy was very, very nice about it. He's just like, yeah, here's your ticket. Do you tell you what, if you show up and dispute this, I'll have them knock it down by half. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks very much. But I just didn't pay it.
So, you know what I love about this story? Every time. I'm a stall man, okay, is what he says. I'm a stall man. Those are Chris Young's words. A stall man is a man that enjoys the privacy of the enclosed walls. There's a little seat. You've got it there. It's like your own little room. It's like a little hotel room. It's a little vacation. And instead of this stall... And instead of using the urinal, The stall man chooses to pee outside against a wall. There's no privacy. There's certainly people walking by. Apparently there's cops looking.
There weren't people walking by. Not with people walking by.
No. This is almost like as far away from a stall as you could get, just peeing against the wall in an alley right by the road.
Okay, but you have to understand, it's not...
What was so nice about that wall versus... You know what they should have had, Patrick?
They should have had those little pee deflectors.
Yeah, pee scoop. Shoot the pee. Put back the pee scoop right
bad.
There.
That would have been bad. Would have ruined my whole night. No, when I say I'm a stall man, it's that I don't like to pee around other people. I don't like to be around other people. I just don't like any sort of publicness about
so,
it.
So, obviously, peeing outdoors in an alleyway right by the road...
There weren't it's a good way there. To... It was an abandoned alley.
An abandoned alley? What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Well, so Jerry, instead of just taking his ticket right away, he makes up a variety of stories. First, he says he could get uromycetitis poisoning. And because of this, he has a public urination license from the city of New York. But his little brother stole it.
They're probably peeing all over the city right now.
And then he decides to come clean with the cop and tell him that he steals a bit of George's story. That it's their 47th anniversary. And then says his father has been in a red Chinese prison for 17 years. And now he's out.
None of that pans out, obviously. It's very weird that Jerry won't just, like, take this ticket and leave. I also, if you notice here, they actually lay the groundwork for a major story in Seinfeld in this episode where George compliments Kramer on his jacket. And it's the jacket that, quote, some guy left behind at his mom's house. Hmm. And that jacket becomes a major plot point several times over. There's a whole episode about getting the jacket back. He trades that jacket for unlimited Cuban cigars in one episode. He claims that jacket is what gives him the ability to pick up women.
Huh.
Really?
Yeah, and so that one line is the beginning of Kramer's whole jacket story. And his jacket kind of rises and falls in prominence over the course of the series. But it starts right there.
Wasn't aware of that.
Speaking of this scene, Kramer has a really weird line where he talks about his friend who has a fat fetish, and, like, he doesn't know what his friend does with all that fat. His friend won't date someone who's under 250. It's very weird.
It is weird.
George looks very uncomfortable with the story, as I would be if someone was telling me this.
It was, it's a bit of a dis... Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this. It's a bad story, and it's weird.
Yeah. But anyway, Kramer, like Jerry, ends up convincing George, who also has to pee, that he should pee in the corner. And he's also caught by the cop.
And George just almost does it, like, out of, like, a sense of pride when Kramer's like, you and Jerry, you know, like they're such, like, prissy people.
Yeah, George is like, I'm not like Jerry. Yeah, but he's also caught, and he tries to use his parents' anniversary story, but it's already been used up by Jerry.
And I gotta admit, as much as I don't like this episode, I do frequently like to quote the uromycetitis poisoning line. I thought that was pretty funny. Especially, it's the sort of, like, earnestness with which Jerry says it. Hearing Jerry lie, like, straight-faced about that is interesting in itself.
Yeah, it's good.
And then we get a monologue break, where they talk about how when people are in a parking garage, you know, when you're following someone, you think they know where the car is, you know instantly when you're lost, because they have this, like, lost look, where they look back and they look lost and confused.
Sorry, I just got distracted. Your mom just sent me a Facebook friend request. Now, you see, on a different sort of show, that would be disingenuous and kind of a put-down. That's the truth. Yeah, you know what? That monologue bit in the middle here, it's not too bad, actually. Because when he does this little thing about how you don't see the guy in the plane opening up the cockpit door and looking out, I had a little chuckle.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's funny, it's a little absurdist. I like it. I approve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they cut back, and we see George complaining about this Mercedes that is parked across two spaces, and George is complaining about it. Then the guy comes out, and George just kind of kowtows from me, weasels.
Yeah, because George says he's going to spit on that guy's car.
Yeah, he's so offended.
Now, I got to tell you this right now. I hate it when people do that. It makes me furious. The people who have intentionally taken up two parking spots because their car is so much more valuable than everybody else's on the lot.
They're the worst.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't have the will to do it because it's a terrible thing. But, like, I want to just, like, take my keys and just key the living hell out of that car. I just would love to scrape it up. I want it to look like a skating rink on that thing when I'm done with it.
Yeah.
Now, plus, you know, I don't have the will, though.
It reminded me also of the episode where George builds himself up to tell off that ex-girlfriend that left him at that first date with, you know, chocolate all over his jacket. Yeah. How, you know what? Okay, maybe you're not going to go over and spit on his car, but at least just, like, tell the guy off. Be like, yo, dude, you can't just take up two parking spots.
That's quite a tell-off.
Well,
yeah, you know, I don't really know. I guess George is just a coward is the reason he doesn't do it. He's worried the guy will beat him up or something.
He's got Gary there.
You know what? This is Rich coming from Chris Young. Let me give you a vintage Chris Young story here about Chris's lack of passiveness in these things. Now, Patrick, I'm sure you're familiar with driver rage, if you will.
Road rage.
Road rage, yeah. Road rage.
Sure.
Chris story Young, from when we were 14.
No, because, well, we're teenagers.
All right.
Anyhow, Chris Young has a very special sort of road rage that many people don't have. Do you know what he has? Passenger rage. Chris Young is maybe the angriest shotgun rider going. Or at least he was, you know, he's getting calmer in his old age now.
Like if someone cuts you off while you're driving and Chris is the passenger, Chris is upset?
Chris is the one that gets upset and he'd swear and, you know, give him the finger or something.
Yeah. Huh.
So anyhow, we were driving in a little parking lot of this, like, tiny little strip mall sort of thing near my house when we were teenagers. I guess we were probably 17, 18 years old. And this guy started backing out of a parking spot and he wasn't watching. And he almost backed into me. I had honked the horn. And Chris is furious at this guy. And even though he can't hear him, Chris is like tearing a strip off him in the car. You know, he's just this and that, the loud voice. And so Chris proceeds to, as this guy backs out and looks out, just flips him off and gives him this big, I guess, this big grin, like the Grinch, basically. And this guy is frightening looking. Like, he was big. He was built. And Chris just
I didn't know
care.
That when he was in the car.
And so I end up pulling into this parking spot I wanted, like, right next to it. And then this guy, like, you could tell he was furious. He pulls his car up behind us, blocking us into the parking spot. And I get out of the car, and he steps out of his car. He's like, hey, tell your friend to watch himself or he'll get messed up. I'm like, hey, I'm just trying to do my banking here. I was very brave defending Chris. You know, this guy was, I had no
chance. I don't
want
any trouble, mister.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh yeah? Well, you better do something. But then, as he's yelling at me and whatever, Chris looks back out the back window of the car. And, you know, I was driving the Festive at the time, so, you know, it's just like a frame and a bit of glass. And he flips him off again and gives him the big smile. And so, you know, at this point, something's going to happen. I'm his friend. So I go inside to do my banking and leave Chris to deal with this by himself. And as the guy comes over, he's like yelling at the door. And it looks like he's going to kind of like rip the car door off. He's so mad. Chris, to his credit, very bravely cracks the window a little bit and talks to him through the crack in the window. But you know what? Diplomacy wins out because he did leave without ripping the handle off my door.
Wow. Chris, good work.
I try.
That was great. I remember that so vividly. It was a wonderful day.
I bet you guys felt like $1 million afterwards. You probably went and got McDoubles or something.
McDoubles didn't exist. What was that McDonald's burger?
It was Whopper
burger?
Wednesday.
Whopper Wednesday. Chris also liked the Big Extra.
Okay. Yeah. McDonald's. Yeah.
Wow.
I remember we'd go to get the Big Extra, and I'd play Pikmin at the GameCube station.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Or Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah.
You used to kind of like swear, though, and the kids would be there, and you'd, you know, be yelling about how the ghost didn't get sucked up into the vacuum. Those are good days.
It's inappropriate. Slightly.
So now we got the hunky dudes.
Well, yeah, I think we covered the hunky dudes.
Well, I'm just giving people some a little...
Yeah, we got the hunky dudes, and then we cut back to... I guess Elaine is separated from George and Jerry and Kramer, I think, at this point. And so then after George does not tell off this guy driving the Mercedes, Elaine sees them. They're reunited. They tell her that they both... That was loud. They tell her that they both got public urination citations. And then they see that beautiful woman again, or prostitute, as Chris would call her. And Jerry kind of says George has a perfect opening.
Cosette! I love you!
So George has a perfect opening. And he goes over and asks if she'll drive him around. And she does. She's nice.
She's
very
nice.
She says it's no problem. Yeah.
She said she's been in this very situation herself before.
Mm-hmm.
She's suspiciously nice.
Well... yeah, and then, you know, George feels like he's in. He gives like the same grin I think Chris gave this guy in the you know, when he was giving him the finger when this woman introduces herself to him.
And she's so nice when
Michelle,
she's like,
yeah.
I'm Michelle.
Like, yeah, she's into him.
I'm George. And when George looks over at Jerry and he's just so excited and happy. Yeah,
he knows he's in, but within a couple seconds, George manages to mess it up. And I guess he's insulted Scientology somehow.
You gotta wonder how he did that so quickly.
I was gonna say, only George. How do you get to that topic immediately?
I was wondering that maybe she had a copy of Dianetics in the front of the car or something. Maybe.
But if you had a copy of Dianetics in the car, you wouldn't be like, Scientologist's pretty dumb, huh? That must be why you're reading that Scientology book.
Yeah, I mean, if I saw the Bible in someone's car, I wouldn't, you know, instantly insult Christianity.
Yeah.
What's the deal with your God?
Not real.
What's the deal with Xenu?
Yeah, so she's quite sensitive. She kicks him out of the car. But luckily for them, the car's right there.
Serendipity, eh?
Serendipity. Unluckily for them, Kramer is not there.
Now... So they end up just waiting and sitting, and they're kind of like lounging around the car. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but in the dirt on the car, someone scribbled on K-Man in the dirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny. I couldn't make out what the other stuff was on it, but I don't know. I thought that was a funny reference. I don't know if anybody had been calling him the K-Man just yet. But there it is. That was the beginning.
Yeah.
And eventually Kramer shows up and he's got the air conditioner, which is the thing that he lost.
Yeah, and...
That thing is so beat up by now. Like, I mean, there's no way that thing actually works as an air conditioner anymore.
I don't know. If you got styrofoam or something in there, you know, it's going to be protecting it.
It looks so beat up.
It is definitely beat up.
Now, did you notice, Chris, when he throws the air conditioner into the car that he, like, smashes his face against it?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look comfortable.
So, if you watch the inside look, Patrick and I were watching this, after he does it, he tries to keep doing the scene, but Julie Dreyfus can't hold it together, and she's laughing. They're all laughing, and apparently Tom Sharones, the director, has just been, like, feeding it to them in this episode because they can't stop, like, giggling and laughing, and they've been shooting, like, all day. It's, like, late into the night at this point. And he was apparently just like, we're just doing this take. Whatever we get, we're doing it. So there's all sorts of stuff in the scene that you can tell that it has not gone exactly the way that would have been optimal. And one of the things that was not planned was the car not starting at the end. The car was supposed to start, and they were supposed to leave. But the car was just such a piece of junk that they had procured for this episode that it didn't start. And you can see them all laughing inside the car. They're kind of shaking, waving their little heads around like bobbleheads in there. There's some extra scenes, actually, that they cut out from that where Kramer, after like just holding down the ignition, gets out of the car and kind of looks around. Like that. And then gets back in the car and tries again. Like, that's somehow going to do something.
You know, what I don't understand about the end of this episode is... So, the three of them are sitting there waiting for Kramer to find them again. Why didn't they just... Like, why didn't they send, like, a scout out to go look for Kramer now that they found the car? Just remember the spot, send someone out. But they're all just kind of sitting there, upset. Not doing anything. Doesn't that seem weird?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, Chris, maybe this is a good point for you to just tell us in general why you do not like bottle episodes.
Because
the Chinese restaurant one was, but you didn't really say. You just said you didn't like them. Why do you not like them?
I don't like the feeling of just stuck in one spot for the whole time. It's often bottle episodes where the problem is you can't get out of it, and so it makes me think about how much life was awful before cell phones. Like, I hate that. And I just it's also one of those things where, you know, it's like watching a horror movie where you're constantly just yelling at the screen. It's like, just do this. And this whole problem is so manufactured and arbitrary. There's so many reasonable ways to get out of this situation. Just act like regular people and this episode will be over. But there's just something so forced about them not doing the most simple things to organize and get out of there that watching them do that for a whole 20 minutes is just agonizing.
Are there any other bottle episodes in Seinfeld that you remember that really bother you?
I can't think of any. Those are the two that just really stick out.
So we got green pastures from now on.
I think so. Honestly, one of the things that made watching this episode kind of okay was realizing that there's no reason I'll ever have to watch this episode again.
Okay. There we go.
Wow.
I did like the dig at Scientology.
Who doesn't? I guess Scientologists.
Yeah, probably.
Who no longer listen to this show.
David Miscavige is no longer listening to our show.
Mm-mm.
That's...
All right, so the monologue... The episode... the episode closes with a monologue, and it's pretty funny, but it's also... It's like a little blue for Seinfeld.
Yeah, were either of you surprised they got away with that line?
Yeah, so Jerry says that the problem with a big parking garage is everything looks the same and they should name each level offensively. So, for example, a level should be called Your Mother is a Whore. I can't remember the other one. Your Father's an Alcoholic.
Father's an abusive alcoholic, I think. It was pretty harsh, whatever it was. Yeah. The language was harsh.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to trigger a few people in the audience to some bad memories. It's weird. It's kind of off tone for Seinfeld.
Yeah. I was specifically surprised they just got away with being able to say that on network television.
Yeah.
So it was... they don't have it, actually. Never mind. Normally they have the on the script, the stand up there, but they don't have the stand up routine.
Yeah, it's weird.
I like it because it's so harsh. It caught me off guard, so I laughed.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so Patrick, we've heard from Chris. How about you this episode?
It's pretty good. You know, it had some good jokes. I really liked the joke at the beginning about the installment plan of pain that George is going to get if he messes up with his parents. I like uromycetosis poisoning. That's pretty memorable.
Mm-hmm.
I like Kramer carrying the big box.
Yeah, he lugs that baby around pretty well.
I don't know. Overall, pretty good. What about you, Cameron?
Yeah, I don't mind it. Yeah. It's not a great episode by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not bad. I know Chris would obviously disagree with what I'm about to say in particular, but I don't feel like this episode feels particularly long. It doesn't really feel like it drags to me. I'm actually always surprised that the single location episodes don't seem that long to me. I always expect them to feel like they're dragging, but you know, they kind of cheat a little bit in this episode. They do put Jerry into like the security guard's office and stuff like that, which is a huge office for the middle of a parking garage.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. He's got like hot plates.
Yeah, he's got a hot plate. He's got room for a couch, two couches, I think. Mm-hmm. Desk. It's huge. You'd think that they'd want to give most of that space for parking, but whatever. But overall, not terrible. You know, I'd give it a pass.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Wow. Can you believe that?
Quick.
It's another episode. Wham bam.
In the can.
Nice.
Mm.
Got some other business this week?
Oh, we got other business. Every week we have other business. And if you want to follow along with that other business, if you didn't heed my previous request, head over to whatsthedealshow.com. Check it out. We'll have today's piece of other business posted up for you to read. And
if you use an RSS reader on your iPhone or Android phone or something, or Windows phone,
Migu,
the show notes will be right in like the description of the episode, so you don't have to like leave your phone.
What about Palm OS?
I don't know what that is. Oh, Palm OS, sorry. Yeah, I guess so. If you're still using your Palm Pre, your Palm Pixie, it'll be in there.
That'd be WebOS, though, wouldn't it?
That's WebOS. Palm OS was the predecessor.
Oh, okay.
Either way, today's piece of other business, taking its cue from an episode of Seinfeld.
Let's take a look at this here.
Much like Elaine and Lloyd Braun, Shelley Kurbatov, I don't know if that's correct or not.
Seems right.
Yeah. A local resident of Vancouver has taken upon herself to declare February 8th, Say Hi Vancouver Day.
Ugh.
And she feels that she's a lonely resident who's lived in Vancouver for 2 years, but she doesn't want to go the way that they're going in Calgary. No cuddle parties. Mm-mm. No, she wants to meet some people outside of work, and how she's going to do it? Wear a name tag. Everybody in the city, wear a name tag for one day. Chris, what do you think? You lived in Vancouver. Is it hard to meet people outside of work?
This is so dumb. I'm telling you right now. You know what? Here's why you don't have any friends. It's because you live in Vancouver and you're of the mindset that making friends in Vancouver is going to be possible if you wear a dumb name tag. No one in Vancouver wants to wear a name tag. And doing this is going to be like, wow, that's the woman that wants to wear name tags. Let's shun her. All you right, haven't made any friends in 2 years and you think this is going to solve that? What's wrong with you, lady?
Now, I do like the name tag. It's kind of a fun looking design. Now, here's the part of the story which may or may not back Chris up, the sort of sad line from the story. Whether Say Hi Vancouver will be a success is uncertain. Even though Kurbatov carries the name tags in her purse and offers them to people, no one has taken one from her.
Gee, really? Are you aware of what city you're living in?
You know, what's funny, so I'm kind of two minds about this, because I like, almost to a fault, I always root for the underdog, so I want this to succeed for this lady, but if I were on the train or something, and a woman offered me a name tag and said I should wear a name tag to get to know the other people in Vancouver, I wouldn't take that name tag. Or I would if I thought it would make her go away faster. And then I would throw it out in the garbage.
I mean, if someone just handed me a name tag, I'd probably accept it. But if they started, like, really talking it up, like, if unsolicited, there's, like, as you're getting on the train, like, you're going to the SkyTrain station, and there's just people there, and, like, here you go.
Yeah.
I'd probably accept it. Take it. Now, if they stopped me, told me what the event was, and then offered it to me, I probably wouldn't take one. And I just don't understand. This is what I don't understand about this idea, I guess. Because you know what? I don't want anybody to be lonely. You don't want people to feel like,
yeah, they're isolated. That's why I'm on this lady's side. You know, part of me is because I don't want her to be lonely. I want her to have friends.
But what I don't understand is, how would wearing a name tag help solve this problem?
No.
Oh, the your problem name is Thomas. Lady. We have a lot in common. Yeah, I don't understand what's going to happen. Like, imagine you're on a busy street, right? You're downtown. There are literally hundreds of people crossing you as you walk down the street. Are you going to say hi to hundreds of people? You don't have time for that. You have to get to where you're going, you know? Are you going to say hi to every person? That's crazy. It's a crazy plan.
Well, and just saying, just knowing someone's name is not... She lists here that a name tag acts as an icebreaker or an invitation to say hello.
Does it, if everyone is wearing one?
All this name tag does is help people identify each other as similarly stupid. Ooh. Oh, wow. You're wearing that same name tag. You must be just as dumb as I am. We can probably be friends.
But, like, the thing is, when you're in a retail store and a person is wearing a name tag, I don't go up to them.
They have to do it, and they hate it.
Yeah, and I don't use their name when I talk to them. I feel like they haven't told me their name. It's not, I can't just, like, start using their name. Even if I, like, I can't think of the last time I've been at a party where people are wearing name tags. Maybe at a conference or something, people have their name on their badge. I don't use their name either. I wait for them to introduce themselves.
You know what, though? What you just said maybe convinces me that for people who feel similarly to Shelley here, that maybe it is good, because by choosing to wear the name tag, you've indicated that you would like someone to talk to you. So by doing this voluntarily, you are indicating to anybody else that's doing it that you would, that you'd be interested in just, like, striking up a conversation with a stranger. Because it's not the same, because, like, at the Gap, they don't have a choice. So it doesn't feel fair for me to go up and be like, oh, hey there, Mark, I need a size 32 or whatever. Do you have a 32 waist in these jeans? Whereas this we would know everyone wearing this made a conscious choice to wear it, so they could feel comfortable talking to somebody else who did it, because that person obviously wants to participate in this.
But this woman wants everyone to wear them.
I mean, that part's not gonna happen. That's just not gonna happen. And the thing is, they actually cover this twice in Seinfeld. They cover it once with Lloyd Braun, and he loses his job, and then they also do the Kiss Hello episode where Kramer thinks people in the building aren't friendly enough, so he has to take everyone's picture and write their name on it and put it up in the foyer of the building. Like, somehow that's helping. That doesn't help. I would hate that.
Yeah.
My thing with this... Sorry, go ahead.
I just don't think... I guess we've already said this. I just don't think everyone knowing each other's names means anything. Like, just knowing their name is not an invitation to talking to them. Like, you don't know anything about them. It's just as easy if they're a new person, if they're a person with no name tag. Learning the name is not the hardest part about getting to know someone and making friends. That's a pretty easy thing.
That's not even really, like she or she actually talks about saying hello with this thing. You've made a connection, that you're no longer that anonymous person that you walk past or stand beside in a coffee line. But I think you still are. I think if all I know is your name, you could literally just be a stranger to me. I know so little about you that, like, knowing someone's name gives me no emotional investment in that person. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe, to some degree, it gives me a slight emotional investment in that person, in as much as I guess I would recognize them again if I saw them, but it doesn't mean I'm their friend.
Yeah.
My issue with this is I hear people always say things like, oh, it's so hard to make friends in Vancouver, like the city's so antisocial. No, it's not an antisocial city. Those people that say stuff like that almost never go out. They never want to do anything. And they expect people to come up to them and make friends with them. Hmm. And that's the problem that I have. Like, everybody I've ever heard say stuff like that are the people that don't want to go out and do things. They want everything to happen on their own terms. Vancouver is an extremely social city.
Yeah, sucks. I feel like you have to be doing a thing together.
It's harsh.
Well, yeah, it's pretty harsh. But you do definitely have to be doing a thing together to get to know someone. You can't just see them on the street and become friends. People got stuff to do.
Yeah, I don't know what
they gotta go see their friends.
Yeah, that they have.
Yeah, she needs to join a pottery class or something, you know?
Yeah, just get out there. Because she actually, her impetus for this was that she went to a course, she said, and everyone was wearing name tags, and she found that that helped.
But maybe I think it was she was at a course.
I was going to say, it's not necessarily the name tags, it's that she was in a place that she knew some things in common with other people, and she had an opportunity to meet other people.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm walking down the street and I just pull up some random stranger, you know, there isn't that comfort level that you'd have at a course or if you're part of something, because there's no shared experience there other than we're both walking on the same sidewalk.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not going to work.
Probably not. But you know what? I wish Shelley Kurbatov all the best luck in making some connections out there.
Godspeed,
she should
Shelley.
Just move.
Where should she move?
I don't know. Texas.
I don't think there's anywhere where people on the street are just like offering their names and saying hi to everyone.
Maybe a really small town.
Maybe if the town has like 100 people living there and you really notice if there's a new person because you spend all your time with all the people in the town, maybe that'll work.
Just move out of Vancouver. Move out of Vancouver, because when I come back, I don't want to see this one. I don't want to see anybody walk around with these dumb name tags.
Well, it's not going to happen, Chris, so I don't think you need to worry.
And yet, you know what? Because of this news story, if I saw her around wearing the name tag, I probably would say something to her.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're the name tag lady.
I bet because of this whole thing and getting press, she's going to make a bunch of friends. Her personally. Because she's like semi-famous now.
And there's people who... There's other people who would be really into this idea.
Yeah,
I guarantee
and they're going to want to form like a friendship club or something.
Let's all form a friendship club based around the fact that none of us can make friends. Oh, wow. Sign me up.
Chris, you're really mean this episode.
he's got a snarly mean streak going through here. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't accuse her of being a prostitute.
They make friends easy.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Well, you know what? There is a group of people that you share something in common with. People who listen to What's the Deal show. This very show.
If you want to connect with those people,
go to whatsthedealshow.com first. Don't connect to them immediately. You want to have something to talk to them about.
Okay. And then you can follow us on Twitter at WTDShow. And we're on Facebook. Facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. Chris, tell us about something.
You know, you're stepping on my lines and without enthusiasm.
Chris, tell us something.
That's not how I say
it. Okay, you go ahead.
You want to... Okay, you ready for this?
Sure.
And, Christopher, I believe you have a special request of our listeners.
Why, yes, I certainly do. You can go to iTunes. And you can tell us... I got nothing. You can tell... I guess you can rate our show. You know?
You're killing it this week.
Well, I don't want to be mean. I got called out for being mean.
You get called out for being mean every week. I mean, it was only like about 4 weeks ago when Patrick said, Chris, that might be the harshest thing you've ever said.
So what are they going to do on iTunes, Chris?
Rate our show. You know, 1 to 5 stars. And you, let's switch it up this week. You can give us any amount of stars you want.
Wow.
But don't...
Give us 5 stars.
There you go. There you go.
Whatever you do, don't tell us your name.
Yeah, we don't want to know your name.
You know, and if you do want to write your name down, that's fine, but stop listening.
Okay. Oh, boy. Wow. This is some sort of show. You know, ever since I started promising that the next week's going to be better, I just, I don't know what's happened here.
It's gotten better?
It's a great show every week. Yeah, but you know what? We would love to hear from you. You mm-hmm. have some comments or feedback? Definitely leave it. Send us a tweet. Send us an email. We've even got an email.
Send us a Facebook.
Send us a Facebook.
Oh, yeah, our email. whatsthedealshow@gmail.com. Email yeah. us.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Tell us about the various ways that Chris has intentionally or unintentionally belittled or mocked the things that you hold dear to your life.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear that. I really would. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it. I think yep. that's another episode. I think we've wrapped it all up pretty well in a bow. But yeah. you know what I should mention? That, you know, every once in a while I forget to do this. I should talk about next week's episode.
Oh,
so
okay, yeah.
We'll be looking at Season 3, Episode 7. Oh, boy. You know, I tried to taper that out so I could pull it up. The Cafe! Oh, The Cafe. A classic episode. Babu Bot.
Oh, The Dream Cafe.
The Dream Cafe.
Oh.
Jerry becomes obsessed with a rather interesting and broad-menued restaurant that opens up right across the street called the Dream Cafe. And Jerry decides that he must help this man out. George, his girlfriend asks him to take an IQ test to help her out, but he's worried about what it's going to say, so he asks Elaine to do the IQ test for him. And Kramer, well, he's just around making trouble, and we'll pick up with the jacket storyline next week. Overall, pretty great episode, I think, next week. Pretty funny, a classic episode. Everyone loves Babu Bot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's it. So definitely check us out again next week. We'd love to have you back if you can handle another week of this drivel.
They'll handle
drivel.
No, I said, good show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a hearty thank you from Christopher Young.
See ya.
Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week on What's the Deal?
Is this a I was a little show? Bit mean this episode.
You were. Real yeah. mean.
Didn't mean to be. It's this episode.